Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness, Pujya Swami Chidananda Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. How do we look at ISIS? How do we look at what's going on from a spiritual perspective, from a view of karma, from a view of consciousness, from a view of love and compassion? How do we do that? It's crucial to do, of course, because people who are, here's a general rule, whether you're dealing with a massive terrorist organization or you're dealing with a schoolyard bully or anyone in between, people who make misery for others do so because they are miserable themselves. There is no one who harms others. There is no one who abuses others who is truly, deeply joyful and peaceful. When you are, I mean, sometimes it happens by accident. You're walking down the street and accidentally, you know, you trip somebody you didn't mean to, you bump into somebody, it happens. Sometimes in our interpersonal relationships, we hurt people without knowing. Things absolutely happen. But when you do it consciously and purposely, it's only when you are miserable. And again, this is true if your kids are dealing with a bully in school. You can be pretty sure that that bully's home life is not a happy one. Up into terrorist organizations. Now, it's much more insidious in terrorist organizations because, of course, you've got all kinds of mechanisms of brainwashing and propaganda, and it's a system. But it relies on people being dissatisfied with their lives. Without going into an entire political science history, what happened in Germany and the Holocaust couldn't have happened if World War I hadn't happened, rendering so many people in so much of Europe in much bleaker financial situations, and then the Great Depression. It required a system of, or a situation rather, of general dissatisfaction in order for movements of abuse to begin. If someone is deeply peaceful and joyful in their life, it is nearly impossible to get them to become an agent of harm for others. Not entirely impossible. We don't have time to go into all of the, you know, psychological studies of how you can get good people to do bad things. And there is an entire system of study for that. But leaving that aside, so what we know is we have discontent, we have dissatisfaction. And the reason I mention it is not to excuse it, not even to explain it, but to enable us to experience a light of compassion in us for them. Not for their actions at all, but for human beings who are experiencing dis-ease in their own lives, because every one of us has experienced dis-ease. Now, we haven't gone out and joined terrorist organizations. We haven't cut people's heads off, which is why it's not compassion for the acts. It's not forgiveness of the acts. It's compassion and forgiveness for the beings. There's two levels, and it's important here to pause for a moment. And there's two levels on which we respond. One is a personal, deep spiritual level, and the other is a very logistic action level. So on the spiritual level is where we practice compassion and forgiveness and love for them as consciousness. Not how can I love a being who cuts off someone's head. You shouldn't. I mean, there's no reason to love the act of cutting off someone's head. That's not a goal. How can I learn to love beheadings? No. How can I distinguish the act from the soul whose body had a history and an identity and an ignorance and an illusion that led to them being in that situation with a knife in their hands? So that's on a deep spiritual level. And it's crucial for us because otherwise we move through the world with anger. And whether it's anger at terrorist organizations or it's anger at someone who personally abused us, either way, we have to learn to forgive so that we can be free. If we're holding on anger, we are not free. So we may still be alive. It's not our head that's been cut off. But we're not able to really live because we've stuck ourselves in a jail of anger. And so we have forgiveness and compassion for them as a soul. A soul in illusion, in pain, in dis-ease. And we do everything we possibly can to topple the system that has been put in place that enables people who are in a state of dis-ease to have knives in their hands with other people kneeling at their feet. The forgiveness of the soul, the love of the soul, is our spiritual practice. But action is required. It's required on every level, depending on what abilities any of us has. And in many cases, our only ability is to break walls of separation wherever we go. Because here's what we know. And this is true both in terrorist organizations as well as in all of the social psychology studies that have been done about how to get good people to do bad things. In order to do it, you must first dehumanize the other. This happens in jails. This happens in war. This happened in American slavery. It happened in the Holocaust. It happens in wars between religious factions. they dehumanize the other. Oh, black people are like animals. They don't feel pain. You can whip them. This is the system of propaganda that went on in America that enabled them to keep slaves. This is what goes on in our society. And every one of us, regardless of whether you have any power or control in a global political system or not, every one of us has the power, as we move through the world, to break borders and boundaries of separation, to absolutely refuse to identify in a camp of color, a camp of religion, a camp of sexual orientation, a camp of gender, a camp of color. It doesn't matter what it is. Doesn't mean you can't be religious. Doesn't mean that you can't be aware of your gender or your sexual orientation or your color, but we must all refuse to identify in a camp that does the us and them. Because wherever there's an us, there's always a them. And that's the problem. And the more we start to build as us, the more we have to draw lines about them. And violence requires a dehumanization of the other. And so we must absolutely refuse to be part of that in our lives. And do as much as we can politically. Get out of our own selfishness. Get out of our own agendas of, you know, which political person promises that they're going to give us the best tax break, or, you know, that we're going to get the right thing that we want for our job. Get out of that and get into who is it that's standing for a bigger us? Who is it that gets votes by drawing lines of us versus them, versus whose agenda is to increase us and to bring them into us? Who is it that's working for those who are dissatisfied and discontented? You know, I remember right after 9/11, before America invaded Afghanistan, but when they were talking about doing so, Pooja Swamiji actually put together a letter for Donald Rumsfeld, who was the head of defense of America, who was making the decision at that time. And we did a bunch of research and put together a letter that basically pulled all of the finances of how much the military was about to spend on bombing Afghanistan compared to how much it would cost to give every single person on earth access to primary education. How much it would cost to give every single woman on earth pre- and postnatal health care. How much it would cost to give every single person on earth access to safe drinking water. How much it would cost. I mean, there were like five different things. It was education, it was healthcare, it was water. How much it would cost to literally pull every single person out of abject poverty. And it was a tiny fraction of what America was proposing to spend on the war. And the point of the letter was, we're not condoning terrorism. We're not forgiving or condoning terrorists. But nothing exists in a vacuum. And if every man's wife and sister and mother were taken care of, if every man's child were guaranteed an education, if every place we lived had wells that were full of drinking water, it's not that nobody would ever be violent, but they would have a lot less success in co-opting people into a mission of discontentment. And so, whatever each of us, with the power of our pen, the power of our vote, the power of our dollar or rupee or euro can do to break separation and to bring about a greater equality of resources so that we're not breeding populations of people who look out at what others have, and that bitterness is the ammunition in their weapons. I think that's about what most of us can do, unless you happen to have an opportunity to serve on a deeper level. And if you do, take it on any level. And to pray. And to be agents of peace, and to be agents of love, and to be agents of a greater awakening of consciousness in which no one can sit at home and watch a video on YouTube and say, I know I'm going to go join that. How can we create a world in which that bitterness isn't festering in the hearts of so many, that it's so easily ignited by some YouTube videos while you're sitting at home? I mean, that's what's scary about it, is there's that level of discontent, dis-ease, and bitterness that people are so easily co-opted by that. And that's a change that every single one of us can make in our world. And the ripple effects of that are huge. And the last thing I want to say on this is, the tragedy of what happens is people who are looking to spread messages of separation and violence, it's their full-time job. It's all they do. It's all they think about. It's what they're raising money for, spending money on. But the rest of us are not nearly as committed to peace as they are to violence. And if we had people who were as committed, we all want peace in theory, but are we as committed to peace as they are to violence? Are we prepared to work for it the number of hours a day? I mean, they're staying up all night, brainstorming, said, what do we do now? How many of us are having all-night brainstorming sessions? Very few, because it's not impacting us directly. And so we really need, and again, going back to the spiritual level, we need to expand our sense of self. Can my sense of self be expanded? My sense of the world family be expanded? So that I am prepared to work as much for that as I would if the person with the hood kneeling at the foot of the terrorist were my son. You'd stay up all night. You'd work night and day. How can we experience that and then work for it? And it's not just ISIS. It's all over the world. It's what's happening to our environment. It's just a different form of terrorism. ISIS is wiping out people one by one with, you know, knives or bombs. We're wiping out generations. I mean, it's literally genocide of those who haven't yet been born. Genocide of our unborn grandchildren. So it's happening in so many ways. But every one of us has the power to do something. Every one of us has the power to create a change. We're going to create it in different ways. But by being agents of peace, of love, of oneness, of selflessness, that it's not whenever it feels right, when I have time, after I've watched, you know, my shows on TV, before I, you know, get in the bath, I've got 20 minutes or so, I'll put them to some good use. Not that, but how can I really? Not with anguish, but with an expanded experience of self. How can I serve?
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. How can it be that the goal of life is to be liberated from the cycle of life? This is it's a very big misunderstanding in a way that's perpetuated in the philosophy and the spiritual philosophy by those who don't really fully get it. And when you are taking terms that are written in ancient Sanskrit, or you're taking concepts that have come down in an oral tradition, unless they're being taught by people who really get it, or by people who have studied with those who really get it, there's a whole, you know, whirlpool almost of possible misunderstandings. And one of them is this, that the idea of life is to be liberated from life. No. Life is beautiful. Life is full of incredible beauty. The enlightened masters I know, the ones in whose presence I have had the blessing to be, are the most alive, the most connected, the most likely to love and pay attention to flowers. I mean, you drive with Pooja Swamiji around some city, some foreign city somewhere, and you'll pass a turn and he'll say, "We've been here before." And the driver will say, "Well, yeah, this is, you know, the street that I live on where you're staying, or this is the street that our temple is on where you were last night." And Swamiji will say, "I remember that tree. I remember that bush." He's not reading street signs. He's not noticing, you know, the white shuttered pink home. It's, "I remember that tree. This is the only place in all the where we've driven in the city that that tree exists. I remember this. So they are the most connected, the most in love with life and with creation. That from which we need to be liberated is the false identification with the body as who we are, as our life. That's where the suffering comes from. And so when we talk about moksha, liberation, it's frequently, but incorrectly, spoken about as just something that happens after death. Well, once you no longer have a body, then you have moksha. Well, that's not true, because then you're going to get another body. It's like you're going to keep having to do fifth grade until you can do long division. It's not that June comes around and suddenly, you know, long division is a thing of your past. If you didn't get it this time around, come September, you're going to be right back in fifth grade. And it's the same thing with our bodies. Yeah, you get maybe a temporary reprieve, but then you're right back there in a brand new body and you've got to go through it all again. But you don't even pick up right where you left off. I mean, it's not like you pick up right at long division. You've got to go through it all. You get born. My adopted daughter, who's now in her second year, studying in South India, studying software engineering, said something really beautiful to me. Last time she was here, we were talking about the stress that so many students go through, the really horrible stress that they go through, and how even come exam time you read these stories, way too many stories, of students committing suicide due to their exams. And she was so wise. She said, I would never do something like that. She said, because if I committed suicide and I had to do this again, she said, I'd have to take my 10th grade exams all over again. She said, I'm so glad to be done with that I cannot imagine starting over and being prepared to again go through 10th grade exams. So as we come back, you've got to keep learning what it is you didn't learn. But yeah, you start again as a brand new baby. And so the goal, liberation, is not about, oh, take my body and then I'll be free. It's about how can I, in the body, and here's the kicker, using the body means using my brain, which is a physical part of my body. It's made up of very physical form, but it is the organ through which I experience my mind, through which I experience my consciousness, and therefore it is the only tool into my consciousness. So using my body, how can I realize I'm not the body? How can I have an experience through my body, brain, in which I realize I am not the body, brain, but I am consciousness. I am soul. And when you have that's what we talk about, jiva mukti. Free in the body. And that's the goal. Not free from the body, free in the body. If you're in joy and in love, the body is a boon. It's the eyes through which you see sunsets, it's the eyes through which you see your beloved, it's the, you know, tongue through which you get to eat chocolate ice cream, it's the ears through which you get to hear beautiful music. When you're joyful and in love, you can't use the body enough to smell flowers and fragrance and hear. I mean, you want to soak it all up. The body is only a cage. When you've identified with it as you, and therefore it brings you suffering. So the liberation is in the body, not from the body. It's liberation from that which binds me, my ego, and all the workings of it, the jealousy, the anger, the expectations, the frustration, the limited vision, the identities through which we move through the world. You know, they're like stencils. Anybody learn to write by using stencils? You want to know what an A looks like? Well, you've got a stencil, and it's a big plastic thing, and it goes on a piece of paper, and you just have to scribble in, and you pull away the stencil, you've got an A. Well, if that's what's on your eyes and you move through the world looks like an A. Everything else is blocked out. It doesn't matter what you see. It's an A. It's an A superimposed on a garden. It's an A superimposed on a mountain. It's an A superimposed on a person. And that's what our egos do to us. That's when I was talking about we each have themes. So your stencil is whatever that theme of the stories your mind tells you is. And sometimes it's complex. Sometimes it may be ABC. But that's how you see the world. That's what you need freedom from. Because when you can pull that off and really see, that's when things get really beautiful.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. How do I know who I am? Is there any way to realize the self and experience it? Yeah, there is a way. There's a way that the sages and the saints and the mystics of all of our religious traditions have given us. It's something that I think in the Indian spiritual tradition there's been even more of an emphasis on. Because there's such an emphasis on the presence of God in us, it's been much more a focus on know yourself and you will know God. Whereas some of the other traditions are so much more focused on God outside of us that there isn't the same emphasis on knowing yourself. But in both cases, the practices are actually the same. So whether it's a major emphasis or a minor emphasis, whether it's in the traditional part or it's in the less traditional mystical part of the religion. The practices are all very similar. It's all about meditation. It's all about closing your eyes and going inward. Sometimes with prayer, sometimes with chanting, sometimes with introspection and inquiry, but always going within. Because I can tell you who you are. I can say you are divinity. I can say you are soul. I can say you are consciousness. The scriptures say it. And there's an unlimited number of books, commentaries on the scriptures that say it. So the enigma is not, in theory, who am I? You just have to open up any of these books and begin a study. Your soul, your divinity, your fullness, your wholeness, your consciousness, your love, whatever word we use. The enigma is, how do I live like that? How do I know that? Because reading it in a book doesn't actually change me very much, any more than reading a menu fills my stomach. You know what I mean? If you're hungry and I say to you, well, we have, you know, sag and we have cauliflower and potatoes and we have dal and we have chapatis, it's going to sound very nice. It may inspire you to come over for dinner. It might make you salivate and take your mind off of something else and at least bring you in the right direction. But it's not going to fill your stomach. It's not going to actually put nutrients in your bloodstream. It's not going to change your blood sugar. It's not going to do anything to the body that is experiencing hunger. In the same way, when spiritually we're hungry, when spiritually we're thirsty, when there's an emptiness in the heart rather than the stomach, yes, reading books, hearing talks, knowing it helps. It brings us the spiritual equivalent of salivating, you know, so that at least it keeps us from saying, oh, I'm just going to go to the movies, or oh, I'm just going to do this. At least now you want it even more. It's closer. You can almost taste it. But you still have to do the work, just like you actually still have to eat and swallow the food. So the only way to do that is to go within. And there's a whole variety, of course, of different techniques. There's none that are more right than others. Some work for some people, some work for other people. But they're all about going within. Because interestingly and beautifully, the minute that we're able to shut ourselves from who we're not and from the outer world, a lot of the truth of who we are automatically appears. It's not like a treasure hunt where you literally have to, you know, figure out clues and move from point A to point B and go here and run and jump. And we actually just have to remove that which is not self. And that which is left is. And so in many cases, simply the act of closing your eyes, turning inward with intention. Yes, your mind will wander. You'll bring it back. It will wander again. You'll bring it back again. It'll keep wandering. You'll keep bringing it back. Eventually, it'll wander less frequently. Eventually, you'll be able to bring it back quicker. It'll take you less time to realize it has wandered. But simply, even in the beginning, simply going within with intention clears away a lot of that which is not self. So at least start there. You can bring your attention to your breath. You can watch your breath. It's very simple. You can do it anywhere. You don't need special teachings. You can chant very simple mantras if you find that your mind wanders way too much, that even the breath isn't enough to keep it occupied. You could chant "So Hum," which literally means "I am that," the capital T that, the supreme, the universal that. I am that to which I pray. I am that upon which I meditate. I am that. I'm not separate over here. I am the drop of the ocean. I am the wave of the ocean. I am that. You could chant "Om Ma." It's a different one. It doesn't really matter. If there's a particular name of the divine that you love that appeals to you, you could chant that. You could chant, "I am divine." Really. The whole point is to bring the awareness inside. Yes, the Vedic mantras have special power. But also simply going within to the self has special power. There's plenty of mystics in non-Vedic traditions who connected with God in a variety of different languages. God doesn't seem to be partial. And so if your native tongue touches you more and is more meaningful for you, use that. I am divine. I am consciousness. It's all divine. Whatever. Chant something. Something simple. I mean, you shouldn't have to be working your brain to remember the words. Something simple. Connect with the breath. Chant the mantra. And just keep looking in and asking yourself, who am I? Who am I? Who am I? Keep asking yourself that. And it takes you in. And it removes that which you're not.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. So how do we know what God's telling us? We pray. We pray to God. But sometimes we forget to listen. And how do we know what God is telling us? Well, God's voice shows up in so many ways. So many different ways. Shows up in our heads, actually as a voice. Sometimes seeming to be a voice from outside. I mean, I had a personal experience of it literally being a voice that sounded like it was from outside that made my head turn twice very loudly. That's an unusual situation. It's the only time it's ever happened to me. But it happened. So I know that it also happens like that. A lot of times it's a voice within yourself that has a very distinctly different quality than the voice of fear, than the voice of ego. Here's what the quality is. First of all, it's very clear. It's very clear. It's usually very short. So at least in my head, God doesn't speak to me in lots of long paragraphs. My ego does that. When there starts to be, you know, rationalizations and explanations, and then I know, okay, that's not the voice of God. It's very clear. It's usually quite short, because when you're clear, you can be. It's soft. It's not booming. It's soft, but it's very present. And for me at least, it feels like the voice under the other voices. Sort of the river that's running down below. And then it's up to me of whether I'm going to focus on sort of the noise up here or whether I'm going to drop down. And if I drop down, that voice is always there. And sometimes, lastly, the voice of God comes, I have found, in things that are nonverbal, in just the way of the universe to give us a message, to give us a teaching. That the universe just conspires to bring you exactly what you need to learn the lesson you're supposed to learn. In exactly that moment. But you still have to drop down to get it. Because there's always a lot of noise up here. And when things in the universe happen, they don't always happen with banners that say, oh, look here, this is your lesson. You're getting this, right? This isn't a random happening. You know, they're not plastered with bumper stickers or something that say, not a random happening. This is your message from God. You still have to drop down. Get it. And for me, what I have found is when you do, it has that quality of, oh my God. Like it's so clear. It's so clear that that wasn't random. It's so clear how and why that happened. And if you can just drop into that space, you get it. It's a lot less dramatic. So like my ego is very dramatic. There's a lot of drama. And by ego, you know, I don't mean the arrogance level, I mean the whole identity, the whole aspect of who I identify as. It's very dramatic. There's been a lot of, you know, drama in my history, and my ego is very dramatic. And the voice of God is not. And so for me, what I find is when I'm there is that it's a very clear drop from a place up here of activity, but drama into a place of, oh yeah. And it's right there. So you have to be listening, but not always just listening with your ears. It's really a listening with your heart. Because as I said, it's not always verbal. So what are the messages? What are the messages God's trying to give me that are clear, that are there, that I just have to drop out of the drama of my mind to hear? And for me, the last piece that I have found is when you drop into it, it's not easy to do because we're all attached and identified up here with the ego. Oh my God, but this, and oh my God, but that, and blah, but this, and blah, but this, and blah, blah. The minute you allow yourself to drop into that river, there's this sense of such utter rightness that it's like it's freedom. It's absolute freedom. It's literally like you have dropped into the river. Is it a kind of meditation? Yes, but it's in life. And so for me, the times that God has spoken to me have not always been in meditation. They've been walking, they've been moving through life. They haven't even been in walking meditation. I mean, they've been in times of just being in life. And sometimes I have found you don't even realize it until you're there. I mean, if you knew, okay, you know, 5 minutes, God's on, you're gonna quiet down. You're gonna make sure you can, you know, receive and you wanna get every word. And it doesn't happen for me like that. The message is on and then you realize, oh my God, all right, here we are. And you have a choice, of course, to listen or not to listen. To pretend that that wasn't the point, or to realize it was. But no, it doesn't always come in what we think of as meditation. And the only last piece that I would say about this before we close tonight is more important for me, and I can only share this on a personal, what I've experienced level. For me, more than meditation, to hear the voice, I have found courage is needed. Meditation is fantastic and amazing and wonderful for so much else. It gets us into a place of seeing the truth. But on a very personal level, my greatest moments of God is on and talking to you right now have not been sitting in meditation. They've been in life. The meditation is crucial, though, to help you stay in, okay, what's this truth? Now we meditate, now we sit in this truth. Okay, here's the truth, now we sit in it. But it's not, I close my eyes, I sit to meditate, and then the voice comes. And so really what I have found that's most important is just courage. Courage to say, oh my God, that's the message. Wow, that was not how I thought things were supposed to go. That's not what my ego says at all. That's not nearly as interestingly dramatic as I had anticipated this was going to be. But there it is. And it may fly in the face of everything you think you know, which for me it also has several times. And that's where the courage comes in. And then you sit in meditation to allow it to crystallize. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.
Thank you.